CliffCentral.com.
So the other day I had a book delivered to me which has a very interesting cover full of Zapiro cartoons and a tremendous and bold title of 50 People Who Stuffed Up the World, which I love because you see the pictures on the cover. It's got Osama bin Laden and Tony Blair and Adolf Hitler and Donald Trump, George W., even Kim Jong-un. And it's the kind of book that, you know, I feel like a lot of people don't care about history and a lot of people couldn't be bothered to read history in its boring school form. And therefore, they think history is boring, and it really isn't. This is fascinating. This is kind of the worst people in the last 100 years or so. And it's worth having a look at. I think it would teach a lot of people a lot of things about how the world works right now and why we've got to this juncture. And one of the authors is here with me at the moment, Tim Richmond. It's nice to see you, man.
Gareth, thanks very much for having me.
Cool. You wrote it with Alexander Parker.
That's right.
And then you got Zapiro to do some cartoons for it, which is terrific.
Yes, Zapiro adds the magic. To be fair, there are his cartoons from his archive. His archive is so massive that it's a privilege to be able to dip into it.
Yeah. And I didn't even know that he'd done like O.J. Simpson. And I suppose he's been around a long time. He knows this stuff.
Zapiro's right? been around for decades now. And you can actually see some of the evolution of his work. If you look at that O.J. Simpson caricature, that's from probably around mid-90s.
Yeah.
And you can see how he's developed.
It's incredible. I mean, he's the most talented dude. But I've actually got you here. I haven't got him here. Well, let's talk about you.
Well, can I say the last thing about Zapiro?
Sure.
Is he's not only a good cartoonist, amazing cartoonist. He's a very, very knowledgeable man on local, obviously, but also global history and politics. So his input into the book was invaluable.
So what's your interest in history? First of all, what motivated you to write the book?
Okay, we need a little bit of background. So in 2010, Alex and I put together 50 People Who Stuffed Up South Africa.
I remember that book.
That is the most successful book that my small publishing company in Cape Town has put out. It sold 50,000 copies, which is quite a lot in South
Africa.
Brilliant.
That's really good.
And
you did all of it yourself.
Alex.
Yeah. But you guys published it all,
yes,
everything.
Absolutely. And then we followed that up with a book called 50 Flippin' Brilliant South Africans a couple of years later. It was a bit of yin and yang. Yeah. We had a lot of people saying to us, if you do the stuffer uppers, you've got to do the positive as well.
Right.
And you can imagine that the sales of the first book was significantly more than the second book, just because of the title. And so this book, 50 People Who Stuffed Up the World, has been probably in the planning since 2012. We've thought about it, we've talked about it, and one of the things that we wanted to do was take it international. So we eventually managed to get a deal with quite a prominent UK publisher, Little Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm being interviewed today on the 9th of November, and today is the international release day of this book in the UK and Australasia. So it's quite exciting.
Very good.
So that's the background. That's a bit of the context. But to get to what you were talking about, why am I doing a book like this? It's you actually hit the nail on the head up front. History is fascinating when it's told well. And right in the introduction, Alex says that as a kid at school in the UK, he wasn't interested in history because it wasn't told properly. He came out to the Zulu War battlefields of KZN in 1994, mm-hmm. and he spent a lot of time with the legendary David Rattray.
Right.
And David Rattray showed him how important the understanding of our past is to get to grips with our present. And even though this book's been 5 years in the making, every year that's passed, it seems to have got more and more important to put out something like this so that people understand what the hell's going on in the world at the moment. It's as you say, we've come to this juncture. Obama calls it an inflection point where people aren't talking to each other properly anymore. They're talking past each other and they're getting stuck in their little echo chambers and their little bubbles. And there's no understanding of where we've come from. So the book is 20th century and beyond. We're not going back to 2000
years.
The dawn
of time.
No, exactly. So it's about understanding our current place on earth and why things are like they are.
I think it's terrific. I mean, for a number of reasons. First of all, the timing is good because people are going to be going on holiday and they're going to want something fun to read. There's plenty of that. Number two is that it covers a wide range of people. I mean, you consider Justin Bieber and Adolf Hitler are sort of in the same category here. By no means are you trying to equate the evil of Adolf Hitler with the evil of Justin Bieber.
Thank you for the disclaimer.
I get that, yeah. I mean, let's not be literal and stupid about it, because if people have that criticism...
But people are.
Yeah, but then they're stupid.
You actually have to say that.
You have to tell them they're stupid.
This book was put through the legal ringer before it would be published.
You're joking.
In the UK, and we had to say that in the introduction. So if you read the introduction,
I mean, you've got Pol Pot here, and then you've got Kim Kardashian. And as onerous as Kim Kardashian is, you know, the killing fields of Cambodia don't really compare with the devastation she's done in the television landscape.
Exactly. What we said, and our thinking was, you know, we could just do a list of genocidal maniacs, and then you're just counting corpses.
Yeah.
And they're books that do that, and it gets a little bit sort of weary and boring after a while.
You usually, in a drunken kind of after dinner party discussion, get into the who was the worst human being that ever lived discussion. And I certainly think you've covered a lot of them. You've got Stalin and Lenin in here. You've got Hitler. You've got Mengele. You got some pretty unsavory people, Idi Amin. But you've also got some funny ones in here, people who haven't necessarily been involved in mass murder or genocide, but who are also the kind of people we don't really love to pieces. And we can see the devastation that they've wrought, people like Zuckerberg and Alex Jones. And, you know, he's kind of a little bit obscure to a lot of South Africans, I suppose, Alex Jones.
Well, some of the names in here are a little bit more lighthearted. Justin Bieber.
Yeah, sure.
You know, we've put him in there. We don't like his music. He's only got one famous song that has actually transcended his genre. Whereas if you look at even a band like Wham, has five. The Beatles have 20 plus. You know, so he's in here for a reason. It's cultural commentary. You know, we want to put him in there. But you go to someone like Alex Jones is a good example, and also Mark Zuckerberg, very good examples of what we're talking about. So Alex Jones, for those who don't know him, is...
He's a right-wing conspiracy theorist, hot-headed talk show host in America.
He's one of Donald Trump's useful idiots. He has a large following, an inordinately large following, actually, and they vote for whoever Alex Jones tells them to vote for, in short.
The lizard people, they're coming to take over. We've got to watch out because they're around, right around the corner. I can't tell you how angry and how worried I am about the lizard people.
Yeah, the lizard people, the slave children on Mars.
Right.
And he loves telling you how bona fide he is.
Yeah.
But then,
I've done a lot of research. I've got a lot of research here in front of me. I've got papers and papers. I've been reading a lot of stuff.
And if you look into the research, it's his
bullshit.
It's a bunch of guys on the internet. That's what it is. It's absolute bullshit.
All right. So putting this together, was it hard to narrow it down to a certain, because you could have really kept going forever.
We've already got a second book lined up.
Right.
If this one sells, there are people in here who you're going to say, how the hell is Tojo not in here? How's Castro not in here? How's Richard Nixon not in here? How's Kanye West not in here? You know, we're there. But to explain the selection process took years. It was fascinating, and it didn't stop until literally about a week before the book was published. We finalized who we were going to put in. So there are three people in here who have to be in the book. So you're talking about 20th century and beyond. You can't not have Hitler, Mao, and Stalin.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, then your fourth guy is you know, that's up for debate. So we needed to get the balance right. As I said earlier, you can't go from, you know, genocidal mass murderer to genocidal mass murderer.
And what I love is it's not a history textbook. So what you're doing is you're also you're trying to lodge your tongue firmly in your cheek. I mean, you know, you talk about Hitler, his little summary, his sobriquet is Führer of the Third Reich, original Nazi, starter of the greatest war in human history, murderer of Jews, the Hitler of genocidal tyrants, poster boy for a book like this, Lucky Bastard. See, I mean, that's you're not trying to be – there's a bit of commentary here. It's like it's funny. It's not a serious book. If people pick this up and they go, oh, I've got to read this because this is going to fill me in on all the important and salient characteristics of how Hitler rose to power and how he fell, that's not going
to
help.
Yeah, you need to read 10 books to understand that properly.
Correct.
And it's getting back to what we were talking about. This is a book that is – we called it in the introduction deeply unserious, but there is a little bit of a serious message in there.
Sure.
And that is that
– So with Jack Dorsey, for example, you say that he ended – meaningful communication.
Yes. Jack Dorsey is the inventor of Twitter, you'll notice that that particular entry was about 400 words because we didn't want to spend too much time on Jack Dorsey. And we were trying to make a point. You know, you can't actually discuss something in with complexity and detail in 150 characters, let alone, you know, on
social media.
But I'm
still curious. So you've told me about how Alex got involved in history and why do you love it?
That's a good question. You know, my background is magazines. I used to work at GQ. I got into book publishing and I ended up running my own business. And when you run your own business, you get to do what you want, as I think you know. And I found myself gravitating towards sort of irreverent humor. So I don't know if you know a book, Some of My Best Friends Are White by Ndumiso Ngubo.
Yes.
And another book called The Racist Guide to the People of South Africa, mm-hmm. two of our other good sellers over many years now. So that's the one side that interests me. And then on the other side, Alex's book or his idea for 50 People Who Stuffed Up South Africa really got me going into the popular history side of things. So you can say to both of us, actually, you know, what are your history qualifications to write a book like this?
No, but I mean, you don't need to be.
But it's not about that.
No, of course not.
Yeah.
Look, I think it's kind of sad that you even have to defend the ludicrous things that have been brought up in the last 5 minutes of conversation. The fact that there are people, first of all, doing comparisons to see who the worst is and whether or not they all deserve each other's company.
Yeah.
And second of all, to have to qualify that you can write something funny. Do you think that the world has become so politically correct that you have to qualify just about everything in order for people to not take umbrage and be offended and be upset by things?
Yes, I do.
It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, and I find it extremely frustrating. As I said, there was this legal vetting process that went to get the book published in the UK. It was a back-and-forth process. This document, a Word document that started at whatever it was, 5,000 words, and ended up at about 12,000 words, as we went backwards and forwards between the lawyers and us. And it is a case of going, okay, well, you've got to change this word. You've got to add apparently. You've got to put allegedly. You can't suggest that all African dictators are plunderers and murderers and thieves. You have to qualify that only some are and some might not be. And it covers so many aspects of what we deal with today. And again, getting back to the Alex Joneses and Mark Zuckerbergs of the world, it's people living in their echo chambers and not willing to just give the other side, you know, a minute's notice.
Yeah, I also think that you've been clever in that you created a couple of characters that we don't even know, that don't exist in real life as one person, like the woman's glossy magazine editor or the guy who killed Concord. We're not sure if it was one person.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that these things have screwed up our world, because the Concord was a great way to get from A to B really, really fast.
Yeah.
Because there was one technical issue at one airport in France after one or two other little bugs that had crept in. Now suddenly we can't fly in the Concorde.
Well, you get into the backstory there. It's a fascinating story. What you've got with the Concorde, what you've got with the removal of the Concorde from service, is the first time ever that an aeroplane hasn't had a follow-up plane in line for when that plane was removed from service. And so we've devolved. Technologically,
right.
We've gone backwards.
Sad.
As a human race, right. We have gone backwards. And there's an element of human spirit in that, which is the real tragedy. There's this beautiful, incredible vision of human endeavor flying through the skies. And now there isn't. Well, there was, and now there isn't. But as Alex points out, Alex is a motoring expert, amongst many other things. And so he's good on this type of thing. And as he pointed out, is you actually have to have, the industry leaders, the
rule breakers.
Exactly. The technology innovators, you know, who are only used by people who can afford it. But in time, you know, the Rolls Royce from 1920s becomes the Kia Picanto in 2017. And in 10 years' time, if we had followed the right trajectory on Concorde, we would be having a 250-seater, which was half the price of Concorde, flying at the same speed. And in 20 years' time, we would have had a 400-seater that could have flown from Cape Town to Tokyo in one go in a matter of hours. But we're not going to have that for several decades because of small-minded, petty bureaucrats in Europe.
And the same kind of thinking that made Kodak do that stupid thing that they did in the sort of late 90s, early 2000s, where instead of pursuing their research into digital photography,
which they invented, yeah.
They decided, no, shelve that because it's a threat to our film business.
Absolutely.
And look what happened.
Absolutely.
Dummies.
Yeah, dummies. The people who – it's small-minded dummies.
So, all right. when you go through this list, do you find, I mean, there's some people here who are particularly interesting, to me anyway. I mean, the Gavrilo Princip, this is the guy who started World War One. You can credit him with having created the catastrophic events.
First domino. He knocked the first domino.
Yeah, he killed Archduke Franz Ferdinand.
Yep.
In 1914.
No, 1914.
Was it 1914? Yep. Yeah, 14 to 18 was the war. Sorry. So he killed him in 1914, and that started this huge disaster, which was World War One, which obviously led to Lenin and Stalin and led to Hitler. So in reality, you could say that, you know, history is the series of really, really unique events, these signal moments that happened in human history, which, if they had gone just slightly differently, wouldn't have created a lot of the other shitty events that came afterwards.
Absolutely. Princip is a lesson in cause and effect. And in particular, he's a lesson in ignorant cause and effect, if you want to put it that way, which is getting back to what we were talking about right at the beginning. The guy was 19. He was basically brainwashed by the circles he was running in. There were
Serbian nationalists.
Yeah. They wanted, you know, Yugoslavia to be one country, and a bunch of them went off to kill the Duke, the Archduke. And that story in itself is a hilarious, bumbling.
He failed. You know, he had story. Three or four opportunities where he missed, and he couldn't get his gun working.
And the other assassins also did their thing, and one tried to drown himself in the river, but the river was only 2 inches deep, and so he got caught. And long story short, these kind of bumbling teenagers managed to, by complete fluke, kill this guy. And that knocked over the one domino, knocked over the next domino. And as you said, World War One was started. World War One was rerun as World War Two, 2 decades later. The Russian Revolution came out of it. You're talking 100 million plus deaths out of a fluke assassination in Sarajevo. And this guy, he died. He actually had, I think he had TB, and he died while in prison during the war. And he could never have understood in his wildest dreams what his actions were going to achieve. And what Alex and I think is, we look at a lot of people today who are you know, wanting to do certain things, which just, if you look at the history of it, and if you look at what they're actually trying to do, they're going to cause a hell of a lot of trouble. And it's in anything from, you know, the Grenville Towers in UK incident. Within a week of that, Corbyn was coming out saying, you know, we should appropriate the housing of rich people in the area. That's just populist bullshit. And what that leads to is seriously bad. I mean, you need to read about Stalin and Lenin, because it's not a great stretch to say that the one thing is going to eventually end up at the other thing.
Well, if you look at the Kims in North Korea,
yes,
you've got an amazing sealed off world of completely different rules that just don't apply anywhere else, and rules from the outside that don't apply there. You've got the grandfather, Kim Il-sung, who starts this. He has Russian support for the Korean War, the 1950s Korean War. He sets up this state which is completely dependent on him. It's totalitarian. Mm-hmm. He makes all the rules. He's still the leader of the state.
Yes, he is still the leader of the state. He's been dead since, let me work it out, 1994.
Yep. So then after him comes Kim Jong-il, his son, and now Kim Jong-un, his grandson.
Correct. So this is another case of context being important. So what we've got at the moment is Donald Trump and the third Kim basically fighting each other over social media. I mean, in some senses.
Right. Dick swinging contest on Twitter.
Absolutely. It's a case of going, you know, which one of them is crazier than the other? And, you know, I'm pretty sure it's Kim, but, you know, it's pretty close either way. But understanding the context of what North Korea is and where it came from, and comparing it to South Korea, which is what we do in the book. This is one of our longer entries in the book. I think it's critically important so that you can understand what's going on over there, and you can understand, okay, well, you know, how are they going to fix this? In many ways, it's an intractable situation. I mean, are they going to be able to fix it? So what a likely scenario is Kim is going to have ballistic missiles that can deliver nuclear weapons to the West Coast of America. And America's probably going to have to live with that, because the alternatives are horrendous. They are absolutely horrendous. The alternatives are nuclear bombs being dropped on Seoul and in Japan, and we've got to understand this. You can't just sit here and go, okay, well, I back America, or I'm anti-Trump. You've got to actually have some vaguely nuanced understanding of what's going on here. I mean, why do the North Koreans hate the Japanese so much? I mean, how is Japan involved? How is Russia involved? These are important questions.
And again, if you don't read any history books, you'll never know.
Absolutely.
And then the world is just full of opinions that either other people have fed into your head or that you've come up with by sucking your thumb.
Absolutely.
It makes no sense to me. I meet lots and lots of people these days who don't know the first thing about, you know, the gulags of Soviet Russia. But they will tell you about how marvelous socialism is when it's implemented.
Absolutely.
And it seems to me like this book is an ideal starting point for people like that who want to get their feet wet in history but don't necessarily want to go into, you know, over their head.
Well, thank you for saying that. The real test for us was to walk a centrist path, which is quite difficult these days. You know, where is the center these days? No. You've got left and you've got right. And
even the news networks, you're basically getting echo chambers of your own reinforced ideas.
And you think, okay, well, surely BBC and CNN are neutral. They are far from neutral. They are miles from neutral. And Alex and I were at pains to try and, you know, weight the left and right biases in this book correctly, so that hopefully we're pissing off people on both sides, because the silent majority in the middle who aren't on Twitter, you know, having their meltdowns, want to know what's going on, you know, want to take in what we feel are the objective facts, because there are actually objective facts these days, and there are certain things that are objectively right and objectively wrong, certain moral behaviors. And yeah, well, that's very much our goal.
I'm impressed that you included Bill and Hillary Clinton in this, because a lot of people would say, oh, but they're such nice people.
Oh, they're shockers. Bill and Hillary Clinton. Look, on the front cover, as you said, we've got Donald Trump front cover. So, right. So let's just, anybody listening, you know, Trump's gone down here. George W. Bush has gone down here. But Hillary and Bill are a sign of, yeah, they're the entrenched elite in America, and how it's gone so very, very wrong.
The very symbol of dynastic politics.
Absolutely. And you know, the real left in America hate Hillary more than they hate Trump, because their logic is she should have known better. And she has become so disassociated with the man in the street, the leftist man and woman in the street, yeah, and transgender in the street, that she's sitting on, you know, on another planet, and she's doing her Goldman Sachs talks and her you know, her big banking talks, and she's not making any real change. And that's why she's basically allowed a Donald Trump in. You know, if Donald Trump was against anyone else, even if he was against Bernie Sanders, who's, I mean, basically a loony left, he would have lost. But Hillary allowed him to win.
I thought it was a bit unfair for you to include Robert Oppenheimer in this.
Ah, okay. Well,
no, I'm. You know, we're a lot of opinions.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I'm not going to not suggest the book is great because of this, but I just thought it was very unfair that he was put in, because he didn't love being the father of the atomic bomb,
yes,
and he did warn against it from before he'd even finished making the thing,
yes,
right until his dying day. It was his biggest regret.
Okay,
you know, that famous line of his: "I am become death, destroyer of worlds." He realized that, he quoted, I think, from the Bhagavad Gita when he said that.
Correct.
This was a guy who was not. He was fully aware of what he was doing, but he was doing it also because, as a scientist, it was his job to explore, much like the Concorde inventor would have, you know, been exploring new frontiers. And
correct.
And it was necessary, and there has been a lot of good from atomic energy, and there's been a lot of awful stuff.
Correct. He was obviously a scientist, and he was following the science. It was a natural progression. And this is one of my favorite entries, and again, it's also one of the longer entries, because understanding of nuclear weaponry and where it got us to is very important again. And it's relevant again today. It's, for the last 20 years, it's been a lot less relevant than it was. And if you're a youngster coming through, you don't understand the angst of living in the nuclear shadow. So as I say, very important entry. And we take all those points that you've just said on board. You know, we say it's quite unfair because, you know, the guy after him is Pol Pot, and the guy before him was a nutty inventor.
And what you're really saying is that it would have been preferable to be ignorant.
Well,
which I never like that position. I don't mind any other, but that seems to me to be willful ignorance.
Yeah, no, you don't. Absolutely. We're anti-ignorance, if you want to put it that way. So Oppenheimer was just, he was, shall we say, a figurehead to write about the bomb. We weren't judging him individually morally. And we touched on a few of these things. What these guys were doing in the early 1940s during World War II was they were trying to stop Hitler. That's where the development of the bomb came from. That was what they were all anti-Nazi. Understandably, there was this horrendous war going on in Europe, and they wanted to get the bomb before Hitler did. And don't forget, Hitler was trying to make the bomb too. But the Allies won the war without having to drop, won the European war without having to drop the bomb. But they still had to finish it because, you know, they'd come that far. And they eventually did, just in time to drop it on Japan. Now, using it on Japan is the interesting question. And a lot of the scientists involved in the Manhattan Project believed that it wouldn't be used, it would be demonstrated to the Japanese, which is naive, obviously, in retrospect. From the other point of view is the American generals. A lot of them wanted to just, they had seven bombs. They wanted to just keep dropping them one after the other at that point. So Oppenheimer's not in here as a morally repugnant person. He's in here as a figurehead of nuclear weaponry. And we probably could have used a number of people. You probably could have used Einstein if we wanted to talk about him, because he was a huge player in getting us to that point. But Oppenheimer, read the book. He's for those out there, you'll understand, I think, why we included him.
The call center drone?
Yes. The call center drone, we were talking about waiting the book earlier.
Shame. I mean, these people, they're just trying to earn a living. Have they really stuffed up the world?
Yes, I think they have. I think they are perhaps a manifestation of how the world is stuffed up, is that you've got to deal with some poor lackey in Bangladesh or wherever it may be, who's just making your life that incremental amount worse than it would have been if he wasn't phoning you and harassing you for a cell phone.
Can I suggest that you instead turn it into a game for your own happiness?
Just tell me how.
Ask them what they're wearing and breathe heavily. Talk about yourself for hours and hours as if you're in therapy.
Do we have enough hours in the day to
do this? You must find the time. Give these people some joy. They have such thankless lives.
And again, understood. And I think the ultimate people we're blaming here are the bosses behind it all, who've sort of looked at the Excel spreadsheet and gone, you know what, we're going to save a half a percentage on our overheads if we ship this off to Bangladesh or to Indonesia or wherever it may be. And as we say in there, the fallout from that is the public relations fallout is that people in the street are so sick of dealing with call centers that they've actually been repatriated a lot of the time to essentially show better public service, I mean, better service to customers.
I like that you included the Guptas, but do you think that they've stepped up the world or just South Africa?
Okay, I need to make a slight differentiation here. So this is you're reading the South African version. The international version has two entries different. So we've also got Victoria Geoghegan in here as the representation of Bell Pottinger, and she actually segues quite nicely into the Guptas because it's alphabetical.
Of course.
And so that's a very good question. Have the Guptas stuffed up the world? Has Victoria Geoghegan or has Bell Pottinger stuffed up the world? And obviously they've stuffed up South Africa in vast and disgusting ways. But our line for the Guptas was to say they've basically created a blueprint for a modern form of colonialism. And this type of thing can be taken throughout Africa and elsewhere in the world. They've created a model. And so on that side of things, even though this is the South African edition, they're in here to appeal to a South African audience. Whereas for the UK edition, we actually had Rolf Harris and Jimmy Savile in the book. And our feeling was that they were lesser known here and wouldn't go down as well here, so to speak. So to answer your question, they've stuffed up South Africa, and that alone is important. But we feel that they do have a potential effect elsewhere. And even you can see their work elsewhere. They've already got their fingers in Equatorial Guinea and potentially other African countries.
Well, good. I'm glad you included them.
And they're on the back cover.
I see that. Mm. Now, did you really want to call it People Who Fucked Up the World? But they said you can't do that.
You're spot on. Very, very sharp. Originally, the South African book, 50 People Who Stuffed Up South Africa, we went with that then. So we wanted to keep the sure. title here. The international title, they called 50 People Who Messed Up the World, because they don't understand what stuffed up means in the UK, supposedly. And I motivated strongly to have F star, 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 star. And they said no.
Ugh.
Yeah, unfortunately.
I do love this. There are a couple of quotes in here that have won me over completely. The first one was, I saw Christopher Hitchens quoted on totalitarian states and North Korea and all the rest. And then I saw Joe Rogan here talking about Kim Kardashian. Listen to this. If aliens came down here and we had to explain human culture, what would be more confusing than Kim Kardashian? If you went to Harvard Business School and said, listen, I'm thinking of starting a business. I want to make 50 times more than the U.S. president, and here's my plan. I'm going to fuck an R&B singer with a giant dick, and I'm going to film it. And that's it. They'd be like, get the fuck out of our office. You don't know shit about business. But they're wrong, and she's right. A woman with a fake ass makes 50 times more than the commander-in-chief of the greatest army the world has ever known.
Isn't Joe Rogan a beaut?
That's awesome. And I do love this. He quotes Ray J. You, this is in the book. You actually quote Ray J from one of his songs, right?
Yes. So Ray J is,
the guy who with the first porno movie with
the
Kim.
Guy who put Kim on the map.
He made her famous.
Yeah.
So in the song Famous, he says, she fucked me for my fame. Look in her eyes. She was the one. She was the first one to sign on the line. She was the real one to plan it all out. Look at the family. They walk around proud, all because she had my dick in her mouth. I mean, that's history.
Yeah, that's Ray J's poetry for you, basically summing it up.
We go from the sublime to the ridiculous.
Yes. And as you see at the bottom of the page there, because that's right towards the end of that entry, it says, look, Kim may only be the fourth worst Kim in the book, but she's – yeah, you know, still, what's wrong with people? So we jump in. It is sublime to ridiculous. It's Kim Kardashian, then it's literally the Kims. And so she is only the fourth worst Kim in the book. But, I mean, for me, she's right up there. I mean, she's right up there.
Well, to end it on the sublime to the ridiculous is to credit Napoleon, who said that for the first time. And since it's a history book, that's very apt as well. So thank you very much for talking to us this morning. And congrats on the book, Tim.
Gareth, thank you very much for having us.
There we go. There's something for Christmas for all your uneducated, stupid, stultified children. Get them to read something about history so they don't embarrass themselves the next time you have your friends around and they walk in and give an opinion about communism. Tell them to read a goddamn book. It's called 50 People Who Stuffed Up the World.
That's beautiful. CliffCentral.com